camera range. There you go.
So I get to look at myself, too. Okay. Hi, my name is Amanda, and I'm an alcoholic. So my sobriety date is March 7th, 2014. And, yeah, a little bit about what it was like. Like you said, I grew up in Clovis, which we always consider is a lot nicer than Fresno. I come from a family of non-alcoholics. And if you're new, I should mention this. I hope that you hear something tonight that you can relate to. You know, not all of our stories are exactly the same, but if you can find the similarities, you know, that's what helped me stay around. And so anyways, I come from a family of people who drink normally, and my parents gave me a pretty good life. Like, I couldn't, you know, of course, complain about the little things, but, you know, my growing up life was, like, fairly normal. I went to high school, and I started to have those feelings about, like, I wanted to experiment with drinking and, like, other things. And I had my first drink in high school, and I loved it. I drank a little bit too much immediately, and I was, like, over at a slumber party with some friends, and, you know, drank a little bit too much. Nothing super crazy happened, but I got that feeling of something that I enjoyed, and I wanted to do it again. I didn't... In high school, I played sports, and I didn't really experiment too much. I did experiment with some weed as well, which I really, really liked. And, you know, my parents were pretty strict. I got caught smoking when I was in high school, so I got grounded and all that stuff. So basically, it was time for me to graduate high school, move on, go to college, and I hadn't really, like, done any of those things to, like, look for a really good school, but I had some friends that were moving over to the Central Coast in San Luis Obispo, and they were going to go to the City College there, and I was like, that sounds really fun, like, I want to do that for sure. And so I moved over to San Luis Obispo when I was 18, and I started going to school there, and that's when my drinking really started to take off. I found myself blacking out a lot, going to parties. Like, I have to say, like, for a while, like, it was really fun, right? Like, my drinking career was good. I didn't have, like, a significant amount of consequences. There were some, but it was pretty fun in the beginning, and I had a good time, and I thought this is, like, what all college kids do, right? Like, they go off to college, and they drink a lot, and, like, that's normal, you know? So, anyways, like I said, like, I like to binge drink. I have learned that what makes me an alcoholic is not necessarily how much I drink, but it's because when I put a drink into my body, I do not have control over the amount that I drink, right? Like, once I get that feeling, like, I don't stop. I have no control over it. And so, you know, what happens to me, I recently have gone through my steps again, but I had to come up with some examples of my unmanageability with alcohol and my powerlessness over it. And so I had to think about, like, my plan for the night. So, like, you know, one night in my college years of drinking, my plan was to go out and get drunk. But not, like, overly drunk. Like, I want to get drunk and, like, have a good time and, like, you know, remember the night, but, like, be pretty drunk and, like, have fun, you know, and, like, don't do anything stupid. And what happens is this particular night, I have to be the designated driver. So I'm like, okay, well, my plan is to drink a little bit, you know, like, get a good buzz going, sober up, and then drive us home later in the evening, right? Like, and that sounded like a decent enough plan, you know, like, maybe if I could have a few drinks and then not drink for like 4 or 5 hours at this party, and then I can drive my friends home. Like, that seemed like something I could do, right? Like, or at least I thought I could do. So what ends up happening is, I start drinking and then I can't control it, right? Because I have that alcoholic mind. And I black out. Like, I don't even know, like, what happened at this party. Like, I vaguely remember, like, running around with my friends or something. Like, I don't even know what happened. And so, later on in the evening comes to the point where I have to take us home because I'm the designated driver. And so we think it's a really good idea to go smoke some weed at my friend's house because, you know, like, I have great ideas when I'm super drunk. And so, you know, I go get stoned. I can remember all of this, so at some point I kind of came to. And so we're driving down the road. There was, like, some construction in the street, and I mean, it's not like I really paid attention, but I'm going pretty fast. And I go over, like, something that was, like, being worked on in the road, and it hit my car pretty hard. And I was like, ooh, that was weird. Like, it just sounded loud, but, like, my car kept moving, so I thought, like, okay, like, we're good. Like, at least the car is still driving. And then my friend in the car was like, hey, I really want to get some chips. Can we stop at the gas station? So, like, we pull into the gas station, and, you know, it's late at night, and there was a cop that happened to be there, like, because just my luck, you know. So I pull in, my friend runs into the gas station. The cop walks up to my car, asks me to roll down my window. And he was like, hey, did you know there's, like, something hanging off underneath your car? And I was like, oh, like, you know, there was some construction back there, and I, like, went too fast over it. And he's like, yeah, there's, like, something completely, like, hanging down underneath your car. I'm like, uh-oh. So he was like, also, have you been drinking tonight? And I was like, oh, just a little bit, you know, or, like, no, I don't even remember. Like, I was, like, trying to play it off cool. Anyways, he knew right away, had me step out of the car. I did a field sobriety test and blew into the breathalyzer. I failed. And so then I was arrested. And so I was 19 years old. I come from a family of people who don't drink. They don't get arrested. And I go to jail that night, and I was like, oh, shit, like, this is not good. And I get out the next morning, and I'm, like, super hungover. My friend comes and picks me up. I'm, like, really embarrassed about what happened, right? And my friend was talking to me, and she goes, you know what, though, like, you know, there's not a lot of crime in San Luis Obispo, so, like, cops are just out there, like, looking for drunk college kids. Like, that's, like, their only job. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that makes sense, right? Like, I didn't do anything wrong, but it's because, the cops are just out there, like, looking for drunk kids, right? So, like, immediately that feeling of, like, embarrassment and, like, thinking I made a bad choice or whatever, like, that all kind of went out the window. So I call my mom. I'm like a master manipulator, and I just tell her that whole story. I'm like, look, like, cops are just out there to get us, right? Like, I'm just a total victim in this situation. And so she was like, oh, okay, you know, and, like, she does everything to help me out, right? So, like, I lose my license. I have to I'm on probation for, like, a year. I have to pay all these fines. I have to go to court. I have to do community service, like, all of those things, right? And then they also order me to go to, like, 10 AA meetings. And I was like, okay, well, I'm just a college kid. Like, a lot of college kids just drink a lot, right? And the thing is that so I was ordered to go to these 10 AA meetings. I had no plan to go to them. Someone had told me that they forged the signatures on their card. And I was like, cool, like, I'm going to do that because, like, there's no way that I belong in AA at all. So I proceeded to do that, and I had gone through, I was doing, like, the outpatient classes, but, like, the whole time I'm just like, I don't belong here, you know? And so, like, I didn't really think I had any problem. And during that time period, I did stop drinking for maybe about 6 months, but I was like smoking weed every day because I just needed like something to hold me over, right? Like I just looked for those like replacements for the alcohol. And, you know, eventually I go out drinking again the next like 6 months from then. Like I think like, okay, I don't have any problems drinking, and I completely black out at this thing and I get in trouble again. Like, so the thing is that I have this pattern, right? Like where like when I put something into my body, I can't control the amount, and then I do something stupid. I do something embarrassing or whatever. And so this proceeded to happen quite a bit. You know, I ruined several friendships during this time period. And yeah, I, you know, one of my best friends, it was her birthday. My plan was to go out drinking with her and, go wine tasting for her birthday. And, you know, so my plan again, like I always have a plan, like what it's going to look like for me. Right. So I'm going to go wine tasting. I'm going to get drunk, but I'm not going to get like blacked out drunk. I'm just going to get like classy drunk like people do wine tasting. And, you know, and that didn't happen. Like, I remember I was taking shots in the limo with people in between wineries, and like, I was the one encouraging people to take shots, you know? So like, I'm completely blacked out, and we go out to dinner after that. And it's, we're celebrating her birthday dinner, right? Like everyone else I think was like normal drunk, and I'm like hammered, and I'm like, this shit is boring because we're eating and I need to keep drinking. And I remember calling another friend. I completely left the birthday dinner. I went out to the bars. I got kicked out of the bars. I went to a party. I threw up on myself. It was very embarrassing, right? But the thing is that my friend called me the next day and she was like, you just left my birthday dinner, right? And this is like my best friend that I grew up with, and I like don't care, right? Like all I care about is myself and like how I'm gonna continue getting drunk when I'm in that state. And so that's a little bit about my drinking history. And this, like I said, it just continued to happen. It took me 4 years to get an associate's degree at that city college that I was going to because I kept failing classes and, you know, partying was way more important than going to school. But I eventually got that associate's degree and I transferred to Fresno State to work on my bachelor's. So that's when I moved back to Fresno. I kept partying and my, you know, my parents didn't really, like I had to move back in with my parents. And it wasn't, nothing super crazy had happened, right? Like, they knew I was out there drinking, but, like, nothing serious was going on then. They thought it was like, oh, like, this is still, like, fairly normal, whatever. And at some point, oh, you're getting a call. It's send a voice note. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Sorry, sir. And so I know this is an AA meeting, but other things are a big part of my story and why I ended up here. I won't go into too much detail, but basically what happened was I had met someone who was doing things that are not alcohol, a drier form of alcohol. So I met this guy. I also have this thing with relationships too, where, I feel like I can fix men. This has always been like a pattern with me. I get into a relationship, I try to change the man. It doesn't work out that way. I get into another relationship, I try to make him a better person. It doesn't work out that way. And so, like, I met this guy. He is recently off probation. He lives with his grandparents. He is, he's recently off house arrest or something. I don't know. And, he was using these substances, right? And I'm like, oh, I'm gonna change him. I'm gonna make him better. And, he was using this thing that I was really interested in, right? And like, no one forced me to do it. I was very interested in trying it. I wanted to. And so I started, and what happened was like my life, kind of spiraled out of control pretty quickly. And so, you know, when that started, I'm I'm going to school. I'm getting my bachelor's degree. I have, like, a decent relationship with my parents, nothing crazy. I still have friends at this point, and, like, slowly but surely I start to lose, like, all of those things. I'll just kind of, what it looked like closer to the end is, like, I dropped out of school. And I dropped out of school because I had to have that thing, right? Like, I had to continue getting loaded. It was way more important than anything else. I could not think when I went to class. I did not want to go to school. I had to drop out. And so I dropped out. I was only one semester away from getting my bachelor's degree, but I couldn't handle it. This is where I became homeless. I became homeless. So basically I'm just like avoiding my family at all costs. I am doing all the things that I never thought I would do, right? Like I'm stealing, I am lying to every single person that I know. I am getting arrested. I'm becoming a familiar face to the cops in the Paso Robles area. So now when I run into them, they know my name. And I'm just like getting to this place where I'm like, okay, wait a minute. Like, this was not my life goal, right? Like, I was going to get a degree. I was going to get married in my 20s. This was like my life goal, right? Like, I was going to have kids in my 20s. I was going to live like a normal life, right? And like, none of that happened. And I found myself in this place where I'm like, so skinny because I can't afford to eat. I'm hungry, but I can't afford to eat because all my money is more important elsewhere. And I'm doing all these things that like was not in my moral compass. And the cycle just continued. And so my parents at this point are like really worried about me, right? Like, at one point I was a missing person. My mom couldn't get a hold of me and I had the sheriff call me and said, hey, your mom thinks that you're missing. And I'm like, no, I'm right here. And he's like, okay, well, that's all we can do, you know? And, eventually my mom had to call me and say, hey, like she had to manipulate me so that I could see her because at this point I'm like, really embarrassed. I don't want to see my family. You know, like, I don't want to see anyone. I was dreading when Christmas came around because I was like, ugh, I have to go home and, like, be around these people. Like, I can't do what I want to do. And so my mom had called and said, hey, like, I had recently crashed my car. So she was like, hey, we want to give you your car back. Can we come pick you up? And I'm like, okay, cool. So, like, I don't live anywhere, right? So, like, she had to pick me up at the library because, like, I didn't know where else for her to pick me up. And we're driving in the car. And I remembered I was trying to text someone, and I lost service on my phone. I was like, that's kind of weird, you know? Like, I don't know what happened there. And, like, I was trying to, do multiple things on my phone, and, like, the service was, like, shut off. It wasn't like I was, like, in a dead zone. Like, it was shut off. And I was like, that's kind of weird. I wonder what's going on. And, like, then, you know, they take me. My parents are in the car, and they're taking me somewhere that they said they weren't going to take me. They're like, oh, we're just going to go on a little detour. And I'm like, oh, this is kind of weird. And what happened was we go over to my uncle's house. He lives in the area. And they're like, we're just going to stop here at the house real quick. And so I was like kind of nervous because I'm like, this lot of like weird consecutive things just happened. And I walk into this house and it's like my three brothers and their wives and two of my friends from high school. And then like there's some lady that I don't know. And she's like in the corner of the room and people are all crying and hugging me. And I'm like, oh God, what is this? Like, I was like, just like, so like I wanted to like run out of that room, like as quickly as possible. Super uncomfortable. And so, you know, they sit me down and it's an intervention. If you didn't get that. And, you know, so they did that thing just like on TV where everyone wrote letters. And so my dad goes first and starts crying. And, you know, I've only seen my dad cry maybe like three times in my whole life. And this was one of them. And yeah, it was pretty emotional. And, he was like, will you get some help? And I was like, okay, like, at this point, like, I thought rehab was for, like, really rich people, and I was like, there's no way. I didn't know that there was, like, all these other kinds of rehabs, you know, like, and I just didn't know anything about rehab. Like, I had known at that point, I was like, I don't know how I'm going to get out of this state. Like, I don't know how I'm going to get back to live a normal life. Like, I didn't think, like, rehab was possible for me or, like, anything like that. Like, I just thought one day something was going to happen, and it just happened to be that day. I was like, they asked if I wanted to get help. I immediately said yes, because, like, I kind of wanted to get help, but also, like, I really wanted to get out of that room, because it was seriously uncomfortable, like, everyone crying and worried about me. And so I was like, yeah, I'll get help, whatever. And then, so we got in the car, and I got taken down to Palm Springs, where I went to this treatment center. And it was really scary. Getting sober was really scary. It was something I was like, I like kind of wanted to do, but I was just like, feeling feelings again, and like coming out of something where you're just like, you just messed up a lot, you know, and like having to like rehash all of those feelings and all of those things that, you know, I'm not explaining it well, but you know, you guys know what I mean. Like when you're brand new. And, it was just seriously uncomfortable. I did try to leave rehab. I didn't have a suitcase, but I had like a trash bag, and I put all my shit in it, and I went up to the front, and they're like, well, where are you going to go? I was like, I don't know. And they were like, well, you have any money? I was like, no, I don't, but like, I'm going to figure it out. And, luckily they talked me out of that. But, you know, in rehab, it was good. They introduced me to meetings there. So I got to start to kind of understand how AA worked. And they talked about the 12 steps there. We did a lot of groups. There was like therapy, stuff like that. And so it was good. Like for the first time, I was like, okay, like I'm starting to feel a little bit better. Right. And, I was like, okay, I think I can do this sober thing, maybe. Like, I, you know, I don't know. And they told me, when you get out of rehab, you know, go to meetings, get a sponsor, work the steps, and, you know, get connected with people, right? Like, that's, like, the core things that they talk about when you get out of treatment. And so I was like, okay, well, like, I'm not going to go back to where I was living, because that's probably not great. And so I was like, I'll just stay here in Palm Springs. So, like, I got hooked up with, like, a sober living. They did, like, an outpatient thing with me, too. And it's, like, 1 week into sober living, and I think that I'm going to be okay, because I'm living with three of the other girls that I just got out of treatment with, and they had told us, like, you know, don't stick with the newcomers, right? I don't know if you guys have ever heard that, like, newcomers, like, don't just stick with newcomers, like, find people who have time, and I kind of thought, like, you know, for most of my life, I'm like, oh, I'm always, like, the exception to all of those things, right? Like, that, you know, that didn't work for those people, but it'll be okay for me. And so I think we went to, like, one meeting or two meetings, maybe, but, like, we were, like, hanging out at the sober living a lot and, like, very bored. And, you know, one of my roommates, so, like, we all have, like, 30 days or whatever, one of my roommates was like, man, I just really feel like getting loaded. And I was like, oh shit. And like that thing that it talks about, right? Like, not only do I have like the allergy to alcohol, but I also, and alcohol and other things, but like I have the obsession of the mind, right? And so what happens is that obsession becomes so great that I do not have the power to overcome that, right? And like, this is what the big book talks about. And, that obsession became so, so big that no human power could have saved me. It doesn't matter, right? Like, so I could have stopped thinking about it. I was, like, going to try to save this roommate, right? I was going to be like, no, don't do it. And then, like, in the back of my head, I'm like, yeah, like, let's freaking do it, you know? Like, fuck this, like, sober living thing, you know? And so anyways, the thing is that it doesn't matter where I go, right? Like, I'm going to find what I want to find. It really doesn't matter. Like, I didn't know this town at all. And, like, we went out and, like, we found what we wanted. And so, I relapsed. And this is, like, when you relapse in sober living, you have to tell them and then they kick you out. There's this, like, this dumb rule. I don't even know, like, how this works for people. But they kick you out and then you're supposed to stay sober for 3 days and then you can come back. And I couldn't do that, right? Because, like, I have that obsession and I have the allergy. And once I get some of it into my body, like, I don't stop, you know? Like, once I feel that feeling, like, it's not going away. And so I relapse, and I take that as, like, a free ride. I'm like, cool, like, no one's going to drug test me now. Like, I have 3 days. And so for some reason, 3 days seems like a long time. I'm like, all right, it's on, you know? And so I relapsed with, like, I don't know, like, 3 or 4 other people that were all also new. And we were, like, getting hotel rooms. And I was like, all right, like, this is cool. But, like, something, you know, something's going to happen. I can't do this forever again, right? Like, and my mom, God bless her soul, she is, like, the most codependent woman in the world, but she knew something was up, and she called the cops to my hotel room, and it's kind of like when the jig was up, you know, and I also see that as now, to, like, my higher power intervening in my life. So, like, one day I am using, and then the next day I'm not. Like, for some reason, you know, and I got taken into a sober living again. I remembered that first night. I did not want to be there again. And I just remember I had heard people talking about how they prayed in meetings and they prayed about maybe to have God remove their obsession. I just, that stuck in my mind for some reason. And I'm laying in bed and my skin is crawling and I just want to leave. And I just remembered, I just prayed and I said, God, please remove this obsession. Like, I just want to try to stay here and I want to try to get sober. And that feeling of wanting to, like, leave that sober living went away. And I was like, oh shit, that was kind of weird. And I was like, well, okay. And I stayed that night, you know, and, the next day I was like, okay, well, I got to try to do the stuff that they were telling me to do before, right? Like, go to meetings, stick with people who have more time than you. Doesn't mean, like, I have to ignore the people with the same amount of time as me, but, you know, like, really stick to those people, get plugged into the group. And so that's what I started doing. My roommate, actually, in this sober living, she had, like, 9 months, which is, like, when you're new, like, that's, like, a really, that's a lot of time, and she goes to meetings all the time, and she knows a bunch of people, and I literally just, like, was attached to her at the hip for, like, 30 days, and I was just starting to meet all these people and go to new meetings, and I was starting to, like, feel a little bit better. I had started working with a sponsor at that time, too, and so I was meeting with her weekly. I was going to outpatient. And I will tell you, like, I was a really annoying newcomer. Like, I was, like, very excited about life, like, seriously excited about life. And, like, on that pink cloud, I also, my ego was gigantic. And I thought I knew everything about relapsing and preventing myself from relapsing again, which is, you know, I didn't. But, you know, and that's how it was for a little bit. Life got pretty good. And, you know, it was about 2 years into sobriety. I somewhere kind of fell off the line. Like, I started working a lot and money became, like, really important to me. So me, AA became way less important to me, and I was also in a relationship at that time, so it was, like, the relationship and the money were, like, way more important, and so I found myself, I was, like, 2 years sober, only working, not really going to very many meetings. I was pretty miserable. And at that time I had also, I was like, I'm going to go finish my degree. So I applied back to school and I moved back to Fresno and, I knew I wanted to get out of that relationship that I was in. I just didn't know how. And I knew that I needed to change up some other things that were happening. Like, I needed to get back to the basics from when I was brand new and when I felt really good. Right. So I moved back to Fresno 2.5 years sober, and I met my last sponsor at a meeting, and I was like, I need to start working the steps. Like, what happened was I basically got to my fourth step, and then, like, I didn't do it. Like, I did most of it, and I didn't read it to anyone. I didn't read it to my sponsor that I had at the time, so I'm 2.5 years sober. I didn't finish the steps. I'm, like, miserable, and I, you know, I'm sitting on this fourth step that I had, like, pretty much written out. And so that woman took me through the steps, and I got to read my fifth step to her, and it was so beautiful, and I learned so much about myself, and she helped continue to walk me through those steps. And, you know, I ended up finishing school. I got my bachelor's degree, and I got out of that relationship that wasn't great, and I was starting to feel, like, really good again. And, you know, that's, like, me at, like, 3 years sober, right? And I'm starting to get plugged into people in Fresno, and I found, like, a great fellowship in Fresno and, like, my home group and, like, good meetings. And then I'm 4 years sober, and I decide that it is time for me to go to nursing school because I can't get a job with my last degree. And so I started nursing school. And that was probably, like, the most stressful time of my entire life. And AA became less important during this time as well. And so I'm getting close to the end of school. AA is not that important. I'm not really going to meetings. I'm not doing any of the things that I'm supposed to do. And I'm just, like, fighting with – I have a new partner, and I'm just fighting with that man all the time, that poor guy. And I ended up finding another sponsor because I was like, I need to have a new kind of experience with the steps. And so this woman had kind of been on the back burner, not on the back burner, but she, like, I had met her a couple years ago, and she does big book work. And so I started working with this woman about a year ago, and I have learned so, so much about myself. And it's been really good. I did a really thorough first step, and I came up with those examples about why I am a true alcoholic, the real alcoholic, and, like, why, what are those examples about my obsession? What are those examples about my allergy? And then we did a thing. So I'm currently with this woman. I am on my fourth step. And I'm finishing up the third column of my fourth step, and it's a little bit different than anything I've ever done before. And, like, at least for me, like, the most important thing that I'm learning right now is that, and this is something I've already kind of known anyway, but it's basically, like, any of my resentments towards other people have nothing to do with them, right? Like, it's only to do with me, like, why I am upset at that person, why am I upset at another person. Like, I am not the victim with anything. And over my last, like, six or seven years in sobriety, I came up with more and more resentments, even being sober. And, you know, so I'm working on those right now. I'm trying to find out the root cause of things. I was going to get into them, but I won't. And I'm just learning a lot. It's a really good experience for me. And what she has me do every day, which I don't practice 100%, I'll just be honest, but meditation is really important to her. And so that is something that I've been trying to do every day. On days that I work, I try to even just do, like, a 1 minute thing. If I can, just sit quietly in the car, and it has really helped. And what my goal is with her is to really build that strong relationship with my higher power, because that is the only thing that is going to bring back my sanity, right, from step two, and is the only thing that is going to prevent me from picking up another drink or drug, right? Like, I am beyond human aid. My higher power is the only thing that is going to help me at this point. And so by me working the steps, I clear away all of that shit that I'm holding on to, and I build that better relationship with my higher power, which is the main purpose of having a sponsor. Sponsors can't keep you sober, but they can show you how they do it. And so That's where I'm currently at. I got a lot of stuff going on in my regular life. I did finish school. I am working as a nurse, which is the, again, like one of the most stressful things I've ever done. And being a new nurse sucks. It's a very humbling experience because I'm not good at a lot of stuff and I don't know a lot of stuff. It's very, very good. And I'm also getting married. And so that is very exciting. So I'm planning a wedding. I started a brand new job. I'm doing all this stuff, but like life is good. Like, I am not starting those fights that I used to start all the time. I won't say that, like, I am 100% super spiritual person all the time, because I am not, you know, but that is like the end goal, right? And like, I still have to make amends for how my behavior, and I still have to ask God to remove those character defects for me, because God, you know, I still will act out in certain character defects, and like, God is the only thing that can remove those for me, right? Like, I can't practice being a better person. Like, I want to be the best person I can be. So I'm trying to think, and also service is very important. I am also slacking in that area. I do have one sponsee. I don't know if she hopped on here, maybe not. And she's also doing very well. But service is very important. Staff work is very important, like the three sides of the triangle, right? Like service, recovery, and unity. Thank you very much. I was going to blank out right now. Fellowship is also super important as well. I find myself when I feel disconnected to people in AA, I'm missing fellowship is what I've learned. And so I'm like, okay, well, I got to get out there and fellowship. And when I'm feeling like disconnected from my higher power or from like disconnection in my life, it's because I haven't prayed or I haven't made that connection with my higher power. I haven't done my meditation, you know, and meetings are super important as well. It's important to carry the message. It's important to be of service. I am only up here being super uncomfortable because this is how I try to stay sober. And I think that is it. Thanks.